Welcome back to season two of Snubs and Dubs, where we're talking about the snubs and dubs of the 87th Academy Award for Best Picture. I'm your host, Kyle Tobiasen, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Miller. Jason, how you doing?
Kyle, I'm doing great. I'm a little sweaty because it's a nice hot day out, and I've been moving stuff, which means every time I forget that I need something, it's in a box, but I don't know which one. But it's been a fun little journey this.
Good.
How are you doing, Kyle?
I'm doing really good. It is also a very nice, warm day.
It is.
So we're back in that consistent weather now.
Yeah.
It kind of just happens sometimes where it'll be that weird spring where the morning is cold and the evening is hot.
Yeah.
And so you have to pick what kind of pants you want to wear, like what time of day you want the pants to be suitable for.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you wear your shorts, you're going to be cold as fuck in the morning.
Yeah, you're committing to that right from the hop.
Yeah.
But it'll be nice in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Whereas you wear pants in the morning, you're fine.
Yeah.
But oh, walking back home after work, you might get a little sweat on. Yeah.
But now, perfect.
Yeah.
Shorts no matter what.
We got past that May long weekend. Speaking of outfits, we're both wearing jorts and a white t-shirt. As you pointed out, we are looking fly. Fully prepared in the official Snubs and Dubs uniform for this audio-only based media.
Well, it's been actually a bit of time because we both got busy.
Mm-hmm.
Did you watch anything in the last almost 2 weeks?
The only thing that I've watched outside of the movie we're about to speak about, we watched together in theaters.
Right.
It was Men, and I kind of forgot it. I was racking my brain coming inside your door thinking, what did I watch these last little while? And it was just that. And I only kind of remembered that I'd watched that.
Yeah. It was one of those where like we saw it and I was like, oh, this might stick with me for a little while. But we also didn't love it.
No.
And
no.
So it like rapidly exited my brain.
Yeah. I think this is telling me that movies in a sense are healing because we had an artsy mid-budget movie. And it was kind of bad. This is where movies should be. We should have like 10 of these a year, in my opinion, of just movies that someone had an artistic idea of, lost the sauce completely, and put out whatever we happened to watch.
Yeah, because I remember turning to you on the drive home after. I was like, who is this even for?
I don't know.
It was like, I guess, for the filmmaker to just do whatever he wanted.
What this kind of seemed to me was like his own internalized guilt about the patriarchy he put into a movie for everyone else to witness, but it wasn't really astute observations and was, I think, in my opinion, keenly not written by a woman. And it kind of looked like that in movie form.
Yeah. A very surreal last like 10 minutes.
Yeah. What's weird is he did something shocking that sticks with you, yet gets old 20 seconds into like several minutes of that thing happening. I was like, at first, like, wow, this is breathtaking. And then I was like, can we finish though? Are we done yet?
Yeah, this is one of those movies where people who like really like loved it or something might be like, oh, you need to watch it again because then you'll understand. I will never put myself through this movie again.
And I feel like I got it. I'm good. Yeah. I don't need to watch this again because it wasn't good.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Yeah.
But I also watched Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers.
Oh, hell yeah. What did you think of that?
I thought it was a lot of fun.
Oh, it's such a fun movie.
It really worked with like the cameos and the whole world that it set was like just so pleasant. Like
it was.
I wanted to be there. Plus, it was like out there with some of its humor. I'm surprised they got away with some of the shit that they managed to do.
Absolutely. Like, and I think we can safely say Ugly Sonic, because he's in some promotional material and very early in the movie, he's everywhere. That was a weird pull, but God, I'm glad they did that.
Yeah. And I thought for sure after that convention setting, that was it. We're going to see him Ugly Sonic, but he's a recurring character.
Yeah.
He comes back.
He's just so good. And that's Tim Robinson of I Think You Should Leave voices him. And I didn't realize it until I was looking at it afterwards. And he does a really good job of that.
That's good.
He sounds ugly too.
Yeah. Good for him. I also liked how where they like were in that place and there was all like the body parts from the bootlegging that they had stolen from other characters. And I was like, this is fucked up.
Yeah.
This is not a children's movie.
Not really. It's a little too dark. And also I think the humor is way too referential for little children to understand. Like the Seth Rogen bits, you need pre-existing knowledge of who Seth Rogen is and who's voiced for that to make any kind of sense.
Yeah. Otherwise, I could see some children watching this movie and it's fun and it's got, you know, accessible jokes and that, but like a lot of it, even like the tame stuff that's super referential like that is just going to go way over their head.
Oh yeah.
Ugly Sonic is not going to age this movie very well because it like people will not get it once they forget that the trailer for the Sonic movie that was adjusted, and now the Sonic movie doesn't look like that.
Yeah.
Like, people aren't going to remember that, but I guess Chip and Dale has immortalized it in a sense.
I think that's fine. I think this is okay for a movie to have like a short shelf life where a bunch of people are going to watch it. I doubt it was very high budget, and it'll like, there's just streaming revenue anyway. So it's going to be in and out of cycles pretty quick.
Yeah. Would you watch another one?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I have a lot of faith. After watching that first one, I think they can pull off a second one.
Definitely. Chip and Dale has been revived. Good job, guys.
Oh, good work. Would you watch the second one? Would you keep going?
I would. Yeah, I think I would. Good. If it's like, if it kept up with this tone, yes, definitely. Yes. Yeah.
If it's straight, I'm out.
Mm. I also saw, I watched the original Top Gun again because I saw Top Gun Maverick.
Ooh.
Twice, actually.
Ooh.
Yeah.
The Maverick.
Holy shit. It fucking slaps.
I've heard really good things about it, but I've not watched it yet.
Mm-hmm. It's good. The second time, I noticed that the first two thirds of it are a bit slower, but because that third act is just so off the walls, fucking crazy, it makes up for everything. And like, I could see people getting a little bit bored in their subsequent viewings. The first viewing, I enjoyed it the whole way through. But because you're waiting for this last bit to happen, because that's where a lot of the awesome, exciting stuff happens, you might find your enjoyment lessened on subsequent viewings, but I would highly recommend, especially watching it in a theater, because that shit was meant to be seen in a theater.
Oh, baby. I'm trying to find an IMAX viewing that I can make in the next, like, this next week. I can't, but like the week after, I'm going to try and slip myself into some Top Gun Maverick.
You might have a window. I don't know what's coming out.
Because I'm banking on there being another week after this now. And I'm hoping that works out, but I don't know for sure.
I think you have enough time until Lightyear. That might be the next big thing.
I mean, I'm going to keep checking. And if it looks bad, I'll just make it work earlier.
Other than that, there was a lot of streaming shows that came out.
Ooh.
Like Obi-Wan started.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
been three episodes of that. I don't know if I'm sold on it yet. There's parts I really like, but there's parts that are very... odd. That's the best way I can describe it. And then also Stranger Things volume one of season 4 came out, and that show fucking rules.
It's still holding.
Oh yeah. Like because it's been 3 years since the last season.
It has been a really long
and
time.
So I kind of forgot, you know, the whole story going forward. And after a quick review, I started the fourth season and I was just right back in it. Like pretty much in the first 20 minutes, I was back in the game. And it's a really good start to the season. There's still two episodes left that are coming out in July. And one of them's like 2 hours and 15 minutes. That's not an episode anymore. That's a movie. Yeah. But even the episodes in this season, they were all over an hour.
Long runtime.
Yeah. It's not like the Disney Plus quote hour long TV shows that are essentially just 44 minutes with 15 minutes of credits. Like it was a solid like an hour 15 for each episode of Stranger Things. And they were all very good.
That's crazy.
I do agree with some of the people's comments that some characters do definitely get sidelined. I think when you have such an ensemble cast and an ensemble cast that grows every season, you will start to lose characters.
Of course. It's natural.
But they did give everybody something to do. It's just what they gave certain people to do did seem kind of side questy and not necessarily essential. And so, but otherwise, like, the cast is just so good.
Yeah.
Especially fucking Steve. I love Steve.
Steve's great. Steve, what a sweetheart. Yeah.
And have you watched season 3?
I think so. I'm trying to remember it. I'm 95% sure I did watch season 3.
Yeah. His relationship with Robin, who was the other girl he worked with, they fucking hit every time. And then they start hanging out more with Nancy in this season a little bit.
Okay.
Because obviously Steve and Nancy had history, but like Nancy and I just said her name.
Robin.
Nancy and Robin were a relationship that I did not know was going to just give me so much excitement, but their chemistry together was so good. Yeah.
That's good to know. That might sway me to watch season 4. I was on the fence about it because I liked season 3, but wasn't as connected to it. Kind of done by the end of it. Might still watch season 4 though.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Sure.
Yeah. What else you watch?
The last thing that I watched was the reason that we didn't record was because I was working at a film festival.
Right.
Which was the Fava Fest, which is the festival for filmmakers that are members of the Film and Video Arts Society of Alberta.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't actually watch most of the movies because I was working.
You were probably a little busy.
Yeah. But I did watch one, and it was a feature length by Kyle Armstrong. It was called Hands That Bind.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a very surreal movie. Very surreal. It kind of methodical, very pretty to look at.
Yeah.
I just don't know how to feel about it because part of me really liked being there, but it's also sometimes kind of boring.
Mm.
And I could feel my attention waning sometimes. And also, I don't know what the point was.
Yeah.
It was one of those where, like, do you think that there's a guiding force throughout the movie, or like mm-hmm. that's everything's going to come to a point and it'll all come together.
Like a narrative?
Is yeah. That
well, yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. And it just didn't feel like it had that narrative force throughout it. There was questions that it seemed like it wanted you to ask, but mm-hmm. it didn't answer pretty much any of them, which was interesting. And I know that that was the choice.
Yeah.
And I think it wants you to interpret certain things. In my case, maybe I'm just dumb and I just want answers, but that kind of fell flat on me.
Yeah.
But definitely really well made. And it's nice to see Edmonton and Albertan filmmakers getting good budgets and having awesome actors like Bruce mm-hmm. Dern and I forget the actor's name, but did you ever watch House of Cards?
No.
Oh, well, anyways, the ghostwriter for House of Cards is his main actor. And so that's great too.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it was cool to see.
You know, sometimes a good film's like a bad teacher that makes you ask a lot of questions, never answers any of them.
Yep. Yeah, but it was cool. And he had a little talk back after. And so we were sitting there and listening to him chat about the movie and could ask questions. And he's a cool guy. So,
that's interesting. Yeah. Good for him. Yeah. There's some Kyle solidarity there.
Yeah. It was good to see not just Albertan filmmakers, but Kyle filmmakers doing well. All right. Well, season 2 of Snubs and Dubs has been covering the films from the year 2014. And for episode 18, to keep in line with the ambiguous release schedule and Academy Award qualifications, we're talking about What We Do in the Shadows.
Ooh.
Have you seen it before?
I've seen this a number of times before.
Yes.
The first time I ever saw this, my friends and I were having like a friend Christmas dinner kind of thing. And we got real drunk. And then we put on What We Do in the Shadows.
Right.
And I remember when the movie finished, I was sitting there quite off tilter because of the booze. And I asked my friends, didn't the movie just start? What happened? And it's because nothing really does happen,
no.
But a bunch of very funny New Zealand vampires hang out.
Yeah.
And I think this is the third time I've watched it since then because nice. I wanted to watch it after that mm-hmm. to see what happened in a sober state. Loved it. Watched it again with my girlfriend a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And then watched it again earlier this week. It's good.
It is good.
Yeah. Have you seen it before?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I don't remember the first time I watched it, but I know I have seen it maybe 3 or 4 times as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really easy Halloween movie, too.
Oh, yeah. Because lightweight, breezy.
It's not like a horror movie, but it is kind of like, you know, it's got spooky characters in terms of
goth vibes.
So, like, I think I showed it to Molly because she doesn't like horror movies, but she would like Halloween type movies. And I thought, this is a slam dunk.
Absolute layup slam dunk.
I think it was last Halloween we watched it. So it has been probably a little over a year.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Well, if you were interested in What We Do in the Shadows, I've included the links to the physical media related to it in the show notes. If you buy through that link, it'll help out our show. Or if you have any other Amazon shopping to do, follow the general link to help out our show in the process. A reminder that this is going to be a spoiler-filled conversation. So if you haven't seen What We Do in the Shadows yet and you want to, go ahead and do so. I've also included time codes in the show notes so you can skip around to your heart's desire. But without further ado, let's get into it. What We Do in the Shadows is written and directed by Jemaine Clement and Taika Waititi based on their short film What We Do in the Shadows, Interviews with Some Vampires from 2005. It stars Jemaine Clement as Vladislav, Taika Waititi as Viago, Johnny Bruges as Deacon, Corey Gonzalez-Musser as Nick, Stu Rutherford as Stu, Ben Fransham as Peter, Jackie Van Beek as Jackie, and Rhys Darby as Anton. It has a brisk runtime of 85 minutes, and it premiered at Sundance on January 19th, 2014, before opening, quote, wide in New Zealand on June 19th, 2014. It didn't hit the domestic market until February 13th of 2014, but I got more on that later. So, what did you think of What We Do in the Shadows?
It's just so much fun.
Yeah.
It's just got a bunch of silly, stupid bits. It's got some dumb people in there, but it's just so like lighthearted, fluffy, good fun. I love it.
I do too. Yeah. It's one of those movies that if you watch it enough, it's endlessly quotable.
Absolutely.
So many just fun little quotes in there. Like leave me to do my dark bidding on the internet. Yeah. Like, just stupid stuff.
Oh, it's okay. We're werewolves, not swearwolves. Yeah. The first time I watched that movie, Blitz Drunk, I came back into consciousness for that line and have never forgotten it since.
It was so funny.
Yeah. No, it's really good. Did you want to just get right into the plot?
Yeah, let's just hop into the plot here.
Jason's going to read right through the plot. Mm-hmm. If you don't need the refresher, you can skip right to the discussion by following the time codes in the show notes. But here's what we do in the shadows.
There's not a lot of plot. There's just kind of things that have occurred in the movie.
Yeah.
Well, a documentary crew follows around four vampire housemates, Viago, Vladislav, Deacon, and Peter, who share a flat in the Wellington suburb of Tiaro. Viago is a 379-year-old dandy from the 17th century who originally traveled to New Zealand in the 1910s in search of Catherine, the love of his life. Vladislav is an 862-year-old known as Vladislav the Poker, who is haunted by memories of his nemesis, the Beast. And Deacon is a 183-year-old former peddler and the young rebel of the group who is turned into a vampire by Peter, a reclusive 8,000-year-old vampire who behaves like a feral animal. Each night, Viago, Vladislav, and Deacon take the bus into town and prowl the streets of Wellington for people to kill. Deacon's human familiar, Jackie, runs errands for the vampires and cleans up the gore left behind by their feeding. A married mother, Jackie hopes to attain immortality, but is frustrated that Deacon will not turn her into a vampire as promised. Deacon requests that Jackie bring virgins to the flat so that the vampires can feed on them. She lures a woman who insulted her in her primary school and her ex-boyfriend Nick to the flat. Though neither are actually virgins, the woman is killed and Nick is chased through the flat and manages to get outside, only to be caught by Peter, who turns him into a vampire. 2 months later, the vampires accept Nick into their group and bond with his human friend Stu, a computer analyst who introduces them to modern technology. Viago uses the internet to find Catherine, who is now a 96-year-old widow living in a rest home in Wellington, and also briefly reconnects with his old servant Philip. Despite being able to get his new friends into popular bars and clubs, Nick struggles to adapt to life as a vampire. Nick is also held in contempt by Deacon, who resents Nick's newfound popularity and his careless revealing of his vampirism to strangers he meets. One of these strangers, a vampire hunter, breaks into the flat basement during the day and kills Peter by exposing him to sunlight. The vampires are furious when they discover Nick has indirectly caused Peter's death, and Deacon tries to kill Nick before being interrupted by a police welfare check. But Viago hypnotizes them into not noticing anything out of the ordinary. Once the police leave, Nick is banished from the flat by the remaining vampires, though Stu is permitted to come as he pleases. Several months later, the vampires receive an invitation to the annual Unholy Masquerade, hosted for the local undead population of vampires, zombies, and witches. Vladislav refuses to attend after learning that the Beast will be the guest of honor. When Viago and Deacon arrive at the ball, they find in attendance Nick, Stu, and Jackie, the latter of whom has been turned into a vampire by Nick. The Beast is revealed to be Vladislav's ex-girlfriend Pauline, and when Stu and the camera crew are discovered to be living humans, the party guests threaten to kill and feed on them. Vladislav arrives and fights with Pauline's new boyfriend Julian. Stu impales Julian on a flagpole, and the vampires and camera crew escape the ball with him, only to encounter a rival pack of werewolves who transform under the full moon. Stu and one of the cameramen are mauled. Believing Stu to be dead, the vampires run away and grieve for him. After an indeterminate amount of time, Nick returns to the flat with Stu, who reveals he has survived the attack and transformed into a werewolf. With Stu's urging, the pack visits the vampires along with Stu, and Nick's banishment is rescinded as well. Though momentarily apprehensive, Deacon invites the werewolves pack inside. Viago also reconnects and rekindles his romance with Catherine, who he turns into a vampire. Scenes during the credits reveal that Vladislav has gotten back together with Pauline, repeating a cycle of self-inflicted torture over his relationship with her, and Jackie's husband is now serving as her familiar. A post-credit scene shows Deacon attempting to hypnotize the audience to forget the events of the film, which clearly doesn't work. Yeah. Because they have it on Wikipedia. He gotta scrub that internet. Come on, Deacon. But that is what we do in the shadows. Or part of it, it's hard to rule things in or out of this plot because they all are equally relevant to not much at all to the greater like narrative of the movie, but it's all such good fun.
Yeah, it is just like basically a sequence of bits. Like,
yeah,
there's like a small plot like throughout, but for the most part, it is just kind of like a documentary about them hanging out and like what they go through in the shadows. And like the whole plot with Nick and then the Unholy Masquerade. Like, I guess that kind of like drives you through to the end, but yeah. I could just sit and watch hours of these guys.
I know. It's really Office-esque in that way.
Yeah.
Both in the mockumentary style and also that, like, you don't really care about like this overarching narrative. Like, it's just a bunch of fun characters doing dumb stuff and a yeah. day-to-day life that's really entertaining. And they come up with some really fun, good stuff going on.
Yeah.
I love when like he has to do the wake up of all the others so they can have like a flat meeting to open the movie. So you kind of get that, like, yeah, they're vampires. They're also just idiots. Yeah.
Stu is one of my favorite characters because
Stu's beautiful.
He's such like a like just an easygoing guy. And yeah. he is like the most flush man alive. And I love that they yeah. make note of that because they want to eat him because of how red he is.
I think you have to. You have to acknowledge that. In anything he's ever been recorded on, you have to acknowledge that he's the most flush person you've ever seen. If we got him to guest on this podcast, he'd be like, yeah. holy shit, Stu. The most flush person I've ever encountered. It had nothing to do with the vampirism either.
Yeah, no, and I love when like they're all like down with Stu and there's like this one bit of Nick talking to Peter.
Yeah.
He's just explaining that like all the guys upstairs like him. And Peter's just like nodding along. It's yeah. just like the prosthetics on that just gross ass vampire. And he's just like, oh yeah, I guess I won't eat Stu. It's yeah. so good.
I love the police welfare check also oh, kills yeah. me each time because like, it's kind of like a done before thing. Mm. It reminds me of like Homer Simpson when he's in the lesbian bar. He's like, wait a minute. There's no fire exit. I need to leave. And it's just them going around being like, oh, wait a minute. Oh, there's no fire alarm in here.
Yeah.
Oh, mate, you got a flammable oil right below an outlet. You got to clean that up.
Yeah, it's so good because it keeps happening too and the music goes along with it yeah. too. He's like, oh, what's this? What's this? And when they're talking with the vampire hunter who's like literally dead on the floor, yeah. he's like, he's not having a good time, is he? He's laying there on the floor. He's going to wake up feeling like shit. Oh, so good. The werewolves are also such a good addition to this, like, this group. And like they have them only like twice. Mm-hmm. But Rhys Darby is so funny.
So good.
And
in
I love the bit when it's like when they do encounter them on the way back from the Unholy Masquerade. And he's just like, so he's clearly anxious because they're about to transform. And he's yeah. just grilling them about their pants choice. Yeah.
And like, when he's, put your hand up if you didn't wear track pants. It's like all of them wore the wrong outfit.
And there's a bit in the credits too where like he's talking about being the alpha male. Mm-hmm. And like they're like laughing along. And he's like, what are you laughing at? He's like, and one guy's just like, he's like stumbling. He's like, I don't know. And then he asks Stu what he's laughing. He's like, oh, I was just laughing at the group. And he's like, yeah, he gets it. Like, it's just the whole group dynamic is just so good.
Oh my God. It's just great that like the werewolves never really do anything wrong. Like
yeah.
every time the vampires start shit with them, it's because they just walked past them and are like, something smells like dog or whatever it is. Yeah. And then the werewolves are just kind of trying to leave, but getting riled up yeah. by them. Like, I love the werewolves, not werewolves. So yeah. much. And then we're trying to chain up to the tree. And he's like, oh, that's not going to hold you, is it?
You know how big you get when you transform? This is so good. Oh, but.
Oh my God. There's just so many parts of this movie that I can point to and be like, I oh, yeah. love that.
Yeah. And it's so funny because did you watch the short film that I sent you?
I watched most of it, but I didn't finish it. It's
yeah.
You can tell what they really liked from that and put into yeah. the movie and also what got cut real quick.
Yeah.
And they were so much worse at the accents in the like the short for it, where it's like,
yeah.
Jermaine, I could not tell, yeah. was even a vampire except for the teeth in his mouth. Like, he had to really yeah. workshop that one.
Yeah. And Tyke is using like a completely different accent yeah. in the movie than he is in the short film. Like, you could tell that the concept is there and mm-hmm. they take like the bits of like them having the flat meeting
yeah.
and them going out on the town. And there's one shot that's like almost entirely ripped from the short that's in the movie when they're sitting in the shop with Stu when he's eating his chips, you know?
Yeah.
Nick doesn't eat the chips in the short film, but yeah. Mm-hmm. And like, I found the short film very slow. Like, it's yeah. almost half an hour and like, they clearly haven't found it yet. They know that this is a good idea, but they haven't found it. And so I'm glad that they actually went further with it and like we got this yeah. movie version of it because
and the budget positive. Going up helped so much.
Oh yeah, for yeah. sure. Like, even just like the vampire teeth, like you could tell that they just bought it at like a Halloween shop.
Clearly, yeah.
Like, they're struggling to speak through these like plastic teeth. That's really funny. But it is quite interesting that this movie has you know, was based on that short that looks as kind of like a bunch of friends fucking around.
Yeah.
And how it's kind of gone on.
And how like huge the people involved in that are.
Yeah.
Because if you watch that short not knowing anything and you go like, oh, one of those guys is one of the biggest directors in the world right now.
Yeah.
Another one's like a massive force in comedy. And the third one's Deacon. You'd be like, wow, I could see that going for Deacon. But the other two, how did they get there from here?
Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. I have some facts about that I can get to in a bit. But what do you think the critics and audiences thought of this movie?
I feel like audiences are going to really like it because it's like a dumb, fun thing. You kind of need to go a little out of your way to get to it. Like, it's not super mainstream, but has like a cult following that's kind of grown in popularity slowly over time. I feel like the critics don't really give a rat's ass about this movie. I'm going to say critics didn't give this like a 63, audiences like an 84 or something like that.
Wow. Well, you'll be happy to hear that the critics did, in fact, love it.
Oh, good on them.
It has a 96%.
Oh, my God. I did not expect that at all. I kind of thought they'd watch it and be like, what, how is this a movie?
Yeah.
That's kind of how I unintentionally watched it.
Yeah. And audiences is an 87.
Oh, okay.
So very high as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is interesting because this is one of those movies that I wanted to talk about for this season because it is so good.
It is so good. It's but so fun.
Like, also, like, how is this competing?
Yeah. How is this keeping up with everything else?
Like, yeah. I don't know. And like, it's such a good year. And like, this is definitely part of that.
Yeah.
But it's clearly in a different stream than the other movies we're talking about. But it is like very well acclaimed.
One thing I wish I looked into more was like the chronology of how this fits into like Taika's career. Because like, how did he get the funding for this? Because watching that short, clearly they have a good, funny idea. How do you take that to a movie right away? Like, clearly he has to have some kind of mustard behind him first.
Yeah, I think Taika had already made Boy.
Okay.
I don't know if that was his first one. I think that might have been his first feature film.
Yeah.
And so he might have had some clout going off of that. And I think New Zealand also funds movies like this.
Probably government grants out the wazoo when Taika was starting.
So that might be part of that too. So, but yeah, there is something about that later too that I have, because it doesn't have that big of a budget.
Interesting.
We'll get through that right
now. Yeah.
So IMDb 7.6, Metacritic 76. So
hey, yeah, they're on the same page there.
So yeah, on a budget of 1.6 million.
Okay, yeah, not big.
Not a lot. It made 8.26 million.
Ooh, that's awesome. That's good to hear.
It's good to hear, but also like for how big of a franchise this kind of is now,
that's
low.
It's
right?
weird that they did franchise that out into like a TV series now when like it's years later.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have any particular extra relevancy. Like, I don't know how they switched back to this other than like Taika became massive.
Yeah. And Jermaine also has some clout as well. And
that's
like,
true.
Yeah. I think Jermaine was a large part in creating the additional content for this.
Probably.
I have some notes here, but it was like too low in the box office to even count for the year.
Yeah, it's
so
not
I don't have a number
there.
For that.
I think some home videos have done better.
Yeah. Yeah. So this was very like largely independent, like almost completely independent. So yeah, as I was saying, despite not being a box office hit, it did manage to create quite the franchise. In June of 2014, Waititi and Clement, in conjunction with... Oh, so I sent you these two. So in conjunction with Discover New Zealand and Wellington Airport, produced promotional short films, Vampire's Guide to Wellington, Behind the Sign, Wellington Sign, and Wellington New Zealand Declared Vampire Friendly, in which they all reprised their roles as Viago and Vladislav. Such a weird...
That's so weird, but like, I'm glad that they were willing to like work with the popularity of this, because this is like a strange kind of thing to go on. This isn't like some super popular mainstream commercial hit that they can kind of work off of, like Wellington tourism. This is still kind of niche that they're diving into.
Yeah. And like, if you were thinking of New Zealand in film and you were wanting something to promote, Lord of the Rings was like...
Wouldn't you think of The Hobbits?
Yeah.
Maybe some other part took that more. So they'd be like, oh, what's our second best thing? Yeah. Oh, no.
I guess the Lord of the Rings and Tolkien weren't, like, as a franchise, aren't exactly New Zealand. But of course, Peter Jackson made that, made New Zealand a big part of that. So.
Legally, they might also be harder to work with. I bet you they have a higher asking price than what We Do in the Shadows did in 2014.
Maybe this is how they recovered some of their funding by doing these. So yeah, that was kind of a side tangent to it being a franchise. But after that, we got Wellington Paranormal, which is another spinoff starring the two cops reprising their roles.
Those are like the two smallest roles.
Yeah.
It'd be funny if like Party Goer 1 and 3 made a spinoff series about clubbing with vampires.
Yeah, but this was created by Jemaine Clement. It first aired in 2018 and it's now on its 4th season.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so it's doing well too. I think it's just basically about paranormal activity going on in Wellington and them solving the crimes. Also kind of office-like and mockumentary sort of thing.
I've never heard of that. That is so bizarre.
Yeah, it's on one of the streaming services. We started watching it a bit, but it didn't click right away for us, me and Molly. Probably have to give it some time. It's like a lot of those comedies. But of course, What We Do in the Shadows was also an FX series also created by Jemaine Clement. That is also about to have its 4th season. So,
and I've heard a lot more buzz and a lot more good things about the TV series, though I've never watched it.
I've only seen the first 2 seasons because that's all that's on Disney Plus, but it fucking slaps, dude. It's good.
I was so scared when the first syllable of your mouth was an S because I assumed Ux was coming after that. But no, it was laps. We're good.
Yeah. It's really good. And I think a lot of people are finding this movie after watching the TV show because a lot of people are watching the TV show. Clearly, it's gone its 4th season and it's an FX show. So I think it's got that Disney money behind it now. But
yeah.
And obviously, it's still got Taika and Jemaine behind it too. And Taika is actually more involved in What We Do in the Shadows, the show, than he is in Wellington Paranormal, because he directs some of the episodes of What We Do in the Shadows. We never directed a Wellington Paranormal episode. Jemaine directs a large amount of episodes for both shows, as does Jackie Van Beek, who plays Jackie in What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, that's kind of fun. Yeah. Oh, good for them.
But yeah, I'm eager to watch season 3 and season 4 because it's a really good show. And I'm starting to be almost more fond of the characters in the TV show than in this movie. Obviously, we get more time in the TV show with the characters. And so they get more chance to go on more zany adventures. But yeah, so I would check it out. Oh, it's a good time.
That is excellent.
Now let's get to our scores.
Now, this is going to be an interesting one because the fun, obviously, way up there. But the rest still needs to be valued as a movie. But Kyle, to start us off here, what are you hitting this for with enjoyment?
I got a 4.5 on enjoyment.
Oh, baby, that's a good one. I will similarly be giving this a 4.5. It's just fun.
It's just fun.
Just silly. What is your craft?
I gave it a 3.5. Don't get me wrong, for it being a small budget independent type film, like they do a lot in terms of like special effects and makeup, and like there's a bat fight.
like how did they do that? I'm really curious how they had bats fighting.
And so there's a lot put into this that makes it work and the world work, and so I gotta give it credit for that.
Yeah, I'm also giving this a 3.5 because clearly they know how to do a movie, because this is such a small budget and they do a lot of really cool stuff in there. Like, they utilize each penny that they have to such a high degree that it's hard not to be pretty shocked by what they're able to pull off with just that 1.65 or whatever it was million. It's pretty shocking. Execution.
I give this a 4. I think a lot of the execution out of this came from the editing of it, which is weird because that's a craft thing, but I'll get to it later, but they filmed a lot more than the 85 minutes that was included in this.
That makes sense.
And so I think the execution is high because the acting is really good. They fully commit, and the writing that they do have is just like funny and everything kind of works well. It doesn't really have a consistent plot, but who cares? No, we're just here for the enjoyment of it.
Yeah.
But I think they were able to be selective. And so I think we're getting the best of the best. So 4.
I'm going to give this a 3.5. I think my only deviation is that the lack of a narrative kind of keeps it where it's at. And if they had like a better storyline, then this maybe could have been a bigger movie. But that's not what they're going for, which is fine. They want it to be a silly mockumentary. I'm sure they probably filmed hundreds of hours. Like, they probably have thousands of millions of days of years worth of movie for this and just slap the stuff like together the most. And it kind of comes across that way in a good and bad way. But I feel like if they really wanted to make like a monumental movie, they could have tightened it up. I don't think they wanted to. I think they wanted a light, breezy, silly little goofball. What's your rewatchability?
This is a 4.5 from me. I think it's so, so easy to rewatch. Not only is it like a great movie, but it's short.
Yeah.
And it's got a good theme in that it's monsters, but it's like happy and like not horror, but like with the those type of creatures. So it's one of those where it's like a Christmas movie. You know when you're going to watch it, at least in my opinion. Like it's, it's a Halloween type movie.
Easy.
Yeah. And so I feel like it's super easy to rewatch.
Yeah. I'm going to slap down a 4 for that one. I'll be watching this probably every year, but I don't know if I'll be watching it more than that. I'll probably skip a couple of years, but I'm going to watch this a bunch. There's probably other stuff I might watch before it, but oh God, it's so easy to rewatch. Yeah. Like every time I watch it again, I'm like, I enjoyed every minute of that.
Yeah.
I only wish I could have seen the thousands of eons of years of material they made outside of this.
Yeah. And I feel like this is one where if you talk to someone who hasn't seen it, you're telling them to watch it.
Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah. Easy to recommend.
Well, you are recommending this to the tune of 16.5 out of 20 for an 83%. And I would be somewhere in the neighborhood of 15.5 out of 20 for a 78%.
Pretty good.
And I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
For the ranking time, Kyle, let me hit you with your top 18 movies.
Sure.
You have Grand Budapest, Paddington, Captain America, Guardians of the Galaxy, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Interstellar, Gone Girl, Nightcrawler, Lego, Selma, John Wick, Boyhood, Snowpiercer, Babadook, Imitation Game, Big Hero 6, Foxcatcher, American Sniper. Where is What We Do in the Shadows?
God, this is getting to the point where you're listing just so many good movies.
I know. It's good luck if you're not looking at it. I don't know what's going on.
I did pick mine ahead of time. Good. And this might sound surprisingly low, but I'm putting it under John Wick over Boyhood at my new number 12.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
For how much I love this movie, you think that it should be higher, but I look at everything above it and I just think everything above it is more of a movie.
Exactly. And this isn't like an ambitious film. It's a couple dudes having a great time.
Yeah.
Like they probably had the most fun of this movie with them making it and having like a silly old time. Oh
yeah, definitely.
My top films right now are Grand Budapest, Paddington, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Interstellar, Gone Girl, Nightcrawler, John Wick, Selma, Guardians of the Galaxy, Lego, Babadook, Captain America, Winter Soldier, Snowpiercer, Boyhood, Big Hero 6, Imitation Game, Foxcatcher, American Sniper. I think I'm going to go a little bit higher. This has like Lego movie kind of area feel to me. I think I'm going to slot this in as my new number 10, going above Lego, probably narrowly below Guardians of the Galaxy.
Wow.
Will be What We Do in the Shadows.
Nice.
Yeah.
I say wow, but that's like two spots away from
really
that.
It's really close. Yeah. Oh, man. It's just... the rewatchability drives this thing up for me because I've already seen it a bunch and I'm not done. You can't stop me from watching it.
All right. Well, I got a couple Letterboxd reviews. Most of them are quick because I did have a lot of interesting facts because there was a lot of fun in there. The Letterboxd score was 4.1 out of 5. So higher than our 3.7, 3.8 average type of thing.
This is such a Letterboxd movie though. Like, of course, those fools and ghouls are going to like it.
This was the most liked one on Letterboxd for What We Do in the Shadows. It's a 5-star by K. Abito. Cracking open a boy with the cold ones.
That's so good. Oh my God.
Here's a 4-star by Joan. When people tell you that they like having guy friends because there's no drama, tell them to watch this.
I can't tell if that's like for or against boy drama existing because like there really isn't any other than they do kick Nick out.
Yeah.
Usually though, you don't let your friends get murdered. This seems like an edge case and he did get shamed quite heavily for it. Fuck, that's such a funny, like the walk of shame gets built up. Them just being like, shame. In the backyard and that's it. God,
it's so funny too because Nick being a more modern vampire is like reacting to it how everyone in the modern would react to it. Great. And last is a 0.5-star by San. No reason for this movie to be this long. San, it's 85 minutes.
This is also a movie you can pause at any time and take a little breather if you somehow need that in 85 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. A lot of the negative reviews were about it just being unfunny and not their type of humor.
And that's fair. Yeah. Honestly, it is a pretty specific type of humor that it lends itself to, especially it's of that era where mockumentaries were everywhere.
Yeah. But I was also surprised to see how many people claimed openly on Letterboxd that they didn't finish the movie.
What?
It's an 85 minute movie. It's not long.
It's really not. And it's also like, if it's not funny to you, I get that.
Yeah.
But it's not a hard thing to sit through because they do stuff. Things are happening. Yeah.
Also, I don't know if this is just me, but like I will never leave a review on Letterboxd if I don't finish the movie.
Yeah, you're not qualified to, yeah. In my opinion. At that point, if you haven't finished the movie, then don't say anything. If you have to force yourself to get to the end, that's probably a 0.5 or anyway. So then, yeah. Then you can leave it.
Yeah.
But who knows? Maybe it gets better in that last little bit. You never know unless you've watched it.
You might have missed the whole Unholy Masquerade and the whole werewolf final battle thing.
You might have missed Stu impaling a dude. Just giving it to him with a flagpole out of nowhere. God, that was so good. Just so unexpected.
I love his stance, too. He's just like down low and looks so determined with his...
so ready with it.
He looks so red. With this fucking plush face. Oh my God. All right. Well, this was clearly not nominated for any Academy Awards. I won't beat around that bush. It was, however, nominated for a bunch of New Zealand Film and TV Awards.
Not surprising.
It was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Johnny Bruges. I think that's Deacon.
I believe so.
Best Supporting Actress for Jackie Van Beek. Best Self-Funded Film. Best Production Design in a Feature Film, Best Costume Design, Best Makeup Design in a Feature Film, Best Sound and Best Visual Effects. It won for Jackie Van Beek for Supporting Actress, Best Self-Funded Film, and Production Design and Sound. So
good for them for having such a small self-funded budget and winning those pretty big categories, because I love the outfits they put together.
Oh, yeah.
But you can tell they did it on a wise dollar. They spent only what they needed to, but they needed to spend it. It was good.
Yeah, it worked. It paid off. All right. Interesting facts times. So as I kind of alluded to, a lot of movie was shot for this movie.
Yeah.
About 125 hours of footage was shot, most of which was improvisational from the cast. The process of editing cut that down to about a 90-minute movie, and that process took almost a year.
Jesus, that's insane.
Yeah, the directors, Taika and Jermaine, have stated that they were considering making all of the footage available online.
Please.
So that the fans could edit their own version of what we do in the shadows.
What stopped them? That's a great idea. That's fantastic. Keep going. Keep rolling. You're almost there. Do it.
Yeah. Which, that would be wild.
Yeah, I'd love that, because I'm sure there's a bunch of gold in there that just like didn't fit with like a movie.
Yeah.
But there's probably some really quality bits in there.
Yeah. Wow. What we'll never get now. Probably won't ever get. Yeah.
We will get it. Get on your phone. Get on twitter.com. Tweet at them. You'll be ignored. But if we get enough people ignored, we'll stop and then we still won't get it. And that's the power of activism.
That's so good. Oh, fuck. So to add to that, Jermaine Clement and Taika Waititi wrote 150 pages of script, but chose not to show it to a single person involved in the film. So both cast and crew, other than themselves. So they only described broad strokes of each scene and what each scene was about, sometimes providing a beginning and an end point. This was to keep things spontaneous and to allow the actors to be surprised by the events unfolding before their eyes.
Oh, this really comes into play, I think, with the scene of this Peschetti when they're feeding Nick and that other woman, because I imagine they were told this is a dinner scene.
Yeah.
And,
that, yeah.
And then that's all they had to go on. It's like, yeah. You're eating worms. Oh, that's gross.
I also loved in that scene, I chuckled when you were explaining it too, but like how Jackie thinks that Nick's a virgin because of her preconception about him being a virgin when they knew each other in like elementary school.
Yeah. The other woman just has like, she's just got a virgin feel to her.
Oh, God. All right. The building used for exterior shots of the vampire's house used to be Peter Jackson's office.
Oh, wow.
And the hill where the vampires have a run-in with the werewolves is the same hill filmed in The Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, where Frodo and the hobbits are running from the Black Rider and hiding under the roots of a tree.
Wow, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
That's a really famous hill. That hill should be having its own credit.
Yeah.
But quickly, back to like, they shot a whole bunch of footage stuff.
Yeah.
How many hours of that was Nick running in the house away from the vampires? Because I feel like they didn't use all of it. They probably filmed that for a long time.
Yeah. I think they probably did a lot of cutaways, like the talking head moments.
Yeah.
That's probably where a lot of that footage was.
Probably.
Because they were probably just able to say, hey, we're going to talk about what being a vampire is like for this. And then yeah. they would have just gone onto it and then just took the bits. Because I think I really noticed that when they were talking about the beast.
Yeah.
Because they all had different bits to say about the beast. And I'm sure they were just like, talk about the beast, gave her a vague description, and then yeah. they just let go.
Probably with no reveal as to what that yeah. is past that.
Yeah. Ugh. This is my favorite fact.
Okay, I'm excited.
Stu Rutherford, and in brackets it says Stu.
Stu Rutherford. Yeah.
Had not played a primary acting role in a movie prior to appearing in this one. He was an extra in Boy, which was Taika's previous film. Stu was a part-time business analyst for a Wellington company, Landworks. He was hired for the film under the impression that he would be working on their computers and that he would only play a small part in the film.
You know what? I kind of knew that one already, but it's really? Such a fun fact because he didn't expect any of this shit and then he's suddenly a main character. But so how was he originally brought into this then? Like, just to do, how did they know him?
Did they
just pick a guy?
Well, he's in the short film, which was in 2005. Right. So they must have had some relationship.
Someone
with
knew him along the way. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess they just like him.
That's so
how
funny.
Can you not like him? He's so good.
He's just so easy going.
All right. Last one here. The movie initially didn't do well in its homeland, New Zealand, so distribution to the United States was canceled.
Mm.
That's why it took so long. The directors were able to bring screenings of the film to the U.S. after raising $447,000 from 7,000 Kickstarter supporters.
Wow.
Where it eventually became the most pirated movie of the year. Reportedly 277,000 downloads.
Damn.
So...
at least they got all these spin-off properties now because they're owed one. The general population has written a giant old IOU by stealing it that many times.
Yeah. All right. Well, any final thoughts on What We Do in the Shadows?
Oh, it's just so much fun. Go watch this movie.
Definitely.
If you haven't watched it, watch it. If you've watched it, watch it. It's just a great time.
Yeah. I say you don't need to watch the short film. Mm-hmm. It's
it might be better you don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's rough.
It is a little bit rough. But I mean, if you're interested in seeing the roots of it, you could. But I mean, yeah, this movie is so much fun.
Yeah. Like once you're done the movie, once you're done the TV show, once you're done Wellington Paranormal, once you're done all the tourism ads, then you can go watch the original short because clearly you want all the content and it does exist out there for free.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for me.
That is What We Do in the Shadows, I guess. Right.
Well, I want to thank you all for listening to season 2, episode 18 of Snubs and Dubs. As always, you can find us everywhere on social media at Snubs and Dubs. That's on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Letterboxd, etc. We're also on Good Pod, so make sure to check us out there and join our official Discord. We'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on What We Do in the Shadows or on this episode. So please send us a tweet or a message with a question, recommendation, or anything else. I'm also at Kyle Tobiasen on Twitter, and Jason is at Wendy_Mills. Of course, all of those links are going to be in the show notes. Make sure you leave a 5-star review, share the show to everyone you know, and check back next week for another episode. Here's a sneak peek of the film we're going to talk about.
It's called motor neuron disease. Life expectancy is 2 years.
I want us to be together for as long as we've got.
It'll affect everything.
You don't realize what lies ahead. This is going to be a very heavy defeat.
But I love him. He loves me. We're going to fight this illness together.
That's right. Next time we're talking about The Theory of Everything, another Best Picture nominee. So make sure to watch it before next episode. We're also going to slide in our second bonus episode of the season before that. So keep an eye out this Friday for that. Can't wait for you guys to hear all of it. Thanks for listening. That's a wrap. Bye for now.
Bye for now.
That's my
line. That's my line.
Bye.